Support for WPR comes from WIPS with Toward One Wisconsin, a conference on equity, diversity, and inclusion, May 7th and 8th in Eau Claire. Registration information and more is at t1w.org.
Support for WPR comes from the Madison Museum of Contemporary Art, an independent organization dedicated to creating experiences that educate, reflect, and inspire. More is at mmoca.org.
The growing season is here, and this hour we get ideas and inspiration on how to make delicious summer meals from our homegrown fruits and vegetables with the Wisconsin Foodie. Good morning, I'm Cynthia Schuster in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 6:07 on Wednesday, June 11th. Do you garden? What are you growing this year? What recipes do you particularly look forward to once you reap the fruit of your labor? You can let us know at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. You can also leave a comment on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Kyle Cherik. He's host and co-producer of The Wisconsin Foodie, which airs on Wisconsin Public Television and Milwaukee Public Television. Kyle, thanks for being with us.
Oh, it's delightful. Thank you.
So what are you looking forward to pulling out of your garden these days?
Well, I'm here in Milwaukee, and on a rainy day like this, I'm not going to pull anything. I'm going to let the rain come down and grow. But we've got two gardens this year. We've got a victory garden in our front yard, and then we've got a community garden nearby. And it's amazing what we're growing this year. We've got everything from, let me think, let's go through the list here. We've got two different types of lettuces. We've got kale. We've got spinach. We've got beans, and we've got peas. We've got cucumbers. We, of course, have tomatoes because that's just, I think there's probably some sort of tax penalty or something if you don't actually plant tomatoes in Wisconsin if you have a garden. We've got cantaloupe, but we have dubious expectations about that if we don't have a super warm summer. We've got radishes, and we've got eggplant. We've got strawberries, and then, of course, we've got our herb garden out our back balcony of our house where we've got just a myriad of, oh gosh, rosemary and Italian parsley, and it goes on and on and on and on. And it's so fantastic because we can send the kids out to grab a handful and come back, and then we can all cook together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's nice. Wow. And of course, you're getting a lot of greens at this time of year. How are you... what are you doing to create inventive recipes and maybe not get so tired of all that lettuce and spinach that's coming up?
Yeah, it's a great. Well, the truth is that I could eat salads every day, and the truth is that it's also a good thing for me to do that because when we film at the show, wherever we go, there's often either something delicious sent over or sent to us, or you know, I'm noshing on something on purpose for the show. So a salad every day when I'm not working is a really good thing. But we work them in. There's just so many myriad of ways to get greens in. There's also the terrifically, you know, the big ones, the like the kales and the collards and the Swiss chard and things like that, that when we grill, which is fairly often when we don't have it in inclement weather, we'll just dust or spray, do the misto of olive oil on top of, and put it right on the grill. And then you get this amazing, warm, crispy, often huge leaf that the kids eat like, you know, high vitamin potato chips, essentially, at dinner. And they're just delicious. It's one of the best ways, I think, to use those, what I call the hyper greens, the really big ones, the enormous, the kinds that you can use for fans in ancient Egypt, should you find yourself in that situation.
And I think I read a note here from, you spoke to our producer yesterday, that you make halibut kebabs, and you use some of those vegetable leaves recipe.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. We've also got a bunch of, we've got peppers in our garden, Hungarian wax and sweet and red and orange and things like that. And, you know, those, like a few others, really take a fair amount of water, which is one of the reasons why we like to grow them, because at least we can control our own water source. When you're buying them in the grocery store, they can get fairly expensive as organic. and we always try and stay away from the high water content stuff, if it's just ironically what's called conventional. Anyway, yeah, chunks of halibut sliced up on a skewer with pepper or tomatoes or even eggplant. You can dust them with a little olive oil. Sometimes you can dust them if you want to do a rub or some other things. And it's just, I think people forget about fish in terms of kebabs, and it's such a clean, great protein. And it's just so delicious on the grill because you can get that, if you like I do, a terrific char. You know, and once your coals are nice and hot, you can even drip just a little bit of oil on the coals and you'll get a flame up. But you control it, and it's 6:12 in the morning. And I'm hungry for that now already. Got me going.
And why halibut in particular?
Oh, it's just, well, it's coming. Well, first of all, it's a nice meaty white fish. So, it's that hybrid between, you know, we all love salmon because it really holds together and it's got that terrific meatiness. If we grew up in Wisconsin, we all grew up eating a fair amount of cod and other whitefish, and they're delicious, but they're really kind of the eraser of fish. They don't have a whole lot of, you know, they're the tapioca. They don't have a whole lot of flavor in and of themselves. And then of course they sort of fall apart. Halibut will be able to cut into nice cubes and put the skewer through, and it really holds its shape, which is fantastic. Even when it clings a little bit to the grates of the grill and gets that good char flavor, you can still lift it off.
And speaking of fish, you also like to make tuna BLTs?
Yeah. you got great notes from your, producer. Yeah, I don't know where I picked this up, but it's a terrific, first of all, the BLT with your own tomatoes or local tomatoes in the summertime. I mean, a just ripe tomato on a perfectly toasted, bread with bacon and cold mayonnaise and lettuce. It's one of the most sublime things, culinary experiences ever. Anybody can argue with me on this, but a perfectly ripe tomato and all the other temperatures going on a BLT, it's just so incredible. It's that combination of flavors that makes this, you know, I mean, it's what works in a hot fudge sundae. And it's what works with when you have the right seafood and risotto. It's perfect. And I don't know where I picked this up, but you get a thinly sliced, maybe for salmon, maybe only like an inch kind of a slab or a couple of those. And you could either do them quickly in a pan or throw them on the grill. And then you need a spatula, I've learned, because it's gonna grab onto that grill a little bit. And really just a quick sear, and you pull it off and you put it between the bread. And I like to go toast, mayo, bacon, salmon, lettuce, tomato, and then obviously another piece of toast. And it's terrific.
Something worth trying. We're talking with Kyle Cherik. He's the host and co-producer of Wisconsin Foodie, which airs on Wisconsin Public Television and Milwaukee Public Television. Vegetable gardens have always been a cost-effective way to get fresh food to your dinner table, and more people are turning to community gardens as well. So we'll be talking about all that this hour. What about you? You can share your thoughts, your favorite recipes, or your questions at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, and our email address is talk@wpr.org. You can also tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking with Kyle Cherik. He's the host and co-producer of Wisconsin Foodie, which airs on Wisconsin Public Television and Milwaukee Public Television. Taking your questions about summer foods, what are you making this summer? What questions do you have for reinventing maybe some old recipes that you have in your kitchen cabinet? Our phone number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And our email address is talk@wpr.org. Kyle, what are some good recipes for vegetables that kids are likely to eat?
Well, I believe that vegetables, if they're prepared, rather, if they're grown in a great way, if they're not with genetically modified seeds on the whole or with tons of pesticides and herbicides, are delicious in their own right. And I think, to be honest, most American parents just don't have the patience to, stare their kids down in a loving way and say, "This is delicious. You can taste it. We love you, but you need to finish it." I don't know how to embellish more than that. We've had that whole experience here with our children, and I really think it's just that. I mean, I'm always curious when the parenting magazines on the aisles have all these terrific ways to need to make a smiley face with the carrots. That if they're good, they're good. They're delicious. And sweet little carrots, which, for instance, we did in our garden last year, and there were these mini things, and my fiance pulled them out and cut them down straight down the middle and did a quick saute with the greens on, which we've learned not to eat, for instance, but which is ridiculous because they actually taste like carrots. Greens taste lovely, like a lettuce meets carrots. Just sauteed in a little butter, it's like candy. And there's no reason. I mean, children have the same palates that we have, though there's certain things, obviously, that just don't taste good to each and every one of us. Unless you expose them to the delights of the vegetable world, how will they ever know?
Right.
So I guess my answer is we don't mask a whole lot of things. What we eat, our kids eat, and vice versa. With the exception of literally coffee, wine, and beer and cocktails, everything that's consumed in our home is consumed across all age groups, and the portion sizes just vary a little bit.
Is it I don't know, I'm thinking of what many parents do out of convenience is feed their children frozen vegetables or canned vegetables or something that would be maybe less tasty than fresh out of the garden. So perhaps a child's first exposure is to something of lower quality or deliciousness. So how do you kind of go back and undo that?
Yeah, I think that's a really, really, really great point. And I'm not necessarily down on frozen vegetables. Clarence Birdseye in the 30s was onto something huge, and he helped a lot. And I mean a lot of Americans over the next 20 or 30 years have nutrition that was available to them that simply wouldn't have been. In that case, then, it's about preparation. But, yeah, it's true. You've exposed your children to that kind of palate. I would answer, this is just tell them this is a better version or this is fresh. If you can grocery shop, which I have to give my fiancé full credit on, in our world, if you can grocery shop with your kids, which we do, and we tell them, you've got to pick out a fruit and a vegetable, you've got to pick out a fruit protein, and you've got to pick out a grain, it does two things. One, it invests them in their diet and invigorates their imagination, which is absolutely fantastic, and then they learn about what fruits and vegetables, grains, and proteins are. It does another thing, which takes a lot longer to grocery shop, and sometimes you do have to do that quick buzz-in kind of thing. It's a process. If you're raising children, you've got time actually to stretch this out. And then even better, if you can do a garden, which is why we have the community garden nearby. It's a 4x8 box, full of great topsoil and compost. And then the victory garden in our front yard, when they can see the things growing and go out themselves and pick them out of the ground, I guarantee they will give it the first bite. And the second guarantee is it will be terrific because it was grown in your own garden. Mm-hmm. It changes everything.
You had mentioned that you had been eating carrot greens and then you stopped. Could you tell us a little bit why you don't eat those carrot greens?
Well, I think as a culture we don't eat the carrot greens because I always call this the pot roast theory, where the woman was cutting off the ends of the pot roast before she put it into the oven because her mother always did that. And then when her mother came over for dinner, she asked why the woman was cutting off the ends of the pot roast. And she said, well, you always did it. I assumed it made it taste better. And her mother replied, no, we just had a small oven. we cut off the greens and we throw them away, or hopefully compost them, because we always have. There is no good reason why we do it. If you think about chives, which I forgot, we're also growing in one of our gardens, that is what we eat. You know, I mean, you're eating the greens, essentially, the stalk, the tops. So there's a lot of flavors, and I have to be honest, my overexposure to chefs and their inventiveness and good ones has turned me on to a lot of aspects of food that's out there that's growing around, from things that can be foraged to just using other parts of the vegetable that we're already growing in our garden. But it's also, this information's out there. If you have an internet connection, it's very easy to find. And I think we need to open up our minds about different delicious aspects of the growing things that we've got right here. You know, Wisconsin is so fantastic because the North Mississippi River Valley is the single most fertile place in the world. This has been proven over and over and over again. And so our soil is so amazing. You can grow anything practically. And it's just lush. It's got the right pH balance. It drains perfectly. It's the favor that geology did us 200 million years ago. And, so get out and garden and then cook with it, because that's really how you connect to your food first and foremost.
And what would you suggest to someone who is interested in getting started in gardening but doesn't know where to begin, or doesn't want to be too overwhelmed with all the different options and seed options that are out there? Like, what's a good starter vegetable for a garden?
Sure. Well, tomatoes, I think, are the natural here in Wisconsin, only because there's so much institutional knowledge on how to grow great tomatoes. And there's a terrific payoff, you know, once they get past the sort of seedling stage and start growing, man, they really grow. And you can put up a simple tomato cage, or you can do a stick or something like that, or even just a couple of sticks and string some rope or twine so that they've got something to grab onto. I think that's where I would start. But it's, you know, I was talking to your producer off air yesterday about the Victory Garden and the overall investment in, or the community garden, for instance. So we're renting it for $50 this summer for the entire growing season. We did not start seedlings in our basement, but if we had, I kind of did a little, you know, back of the napkin estimate, and I think probably we would have spent about maybe $12, $15 on seeds. And all you do is take a little dirt from wherever you get it, and an egg carton, and start them in your basement in February or March, and then transfer them to the garden at the beginning of the growing season. And for $70 across, what would that be? Maybe 5-6 months, you're growing your own vegetables. I mean, you know, once we start harvesting in earnest in a couple more weeks, it will cut our grocery bill down precipitously. Mm-hmm. And we're going out now and pulling off lettuces and things like that we're having in salads for dinner or lunch or what have you, and it's just fantastic. And you pull off the outer leaves, and then the plant keeps giving. It's one of the great miracles in this world. I don't know how it can't be, where you take a tiny thing that you could step over easily, put it in the ground, and it produces something you can live off of for the next month or two. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Yeah, that's alchemy. I don't know if I answered your question. Sorry.
No, well, tomatoes is a good place to start. I've got some tomatoes in my garden, and at this point, the only thing that's growing that I can harvest are radishes. So I will be building things around the radish at this point.
those early summer radishes, those late spring, early summer radishes, are so great because they're so just sweet and incredible. We were eating some a week or two ago when we did the Victory Garden event in a community garden, just pulling them right out of the ground and dusting them off. And I was saying, if every radish in the grocery stores tastes like this, we would, you know, they'd sell them at baseball games. It's so fantastic.
I have to say, I wasn't a fan of radishes before, and then I did grow some last year, and now I'm a new fan of radishes. But I suppose I had been eating sort of the this is a bad pun, but the garden variety of radishes that are served on the relish tray at the parties or something, and they were just too bitter. Yeah. But this is different. This is definitely different.
You weren't a fan of inferior radishes, and the kind that were that were pumped up with way too much hydrogen in the soil and overwatered early is what they do. It would be the equivalent the way that they get those big radishes to look good and have that kind of those Easter egg colorings is it would be the equivalent of giving our children like weightlifting shakes every morning until the age of 7, and then just bringing them into a regular diet.
Wow.
It's big and starchy and really not that smart, I guess, would be a good way to put it. Yeah.
We're talking with Kyle Cherik. He's the host and co-producer of Wisconsin Foodie on Wisconsin Public Television and Milwaukee Television. And we are wondering what summer foods you're looking forward to this year. What are you growing in your garden, and how do you like to prepare them for the dinner table? You can let us know at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And our email address is talk@WPR.org. If you're near Facebook, you can leave us a comment on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. After the news, we'll talk to Kyle a little bit more about his own Victory Garden and about community gardens. Perhaps if you have a community garden plot, you can tell us about that as well and why you got involved. 1-800-642-1234. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's a great time to enjoy the fresh food coming out of our gardens and showing up at the farmer's market. We're getting advice on what to cook with our guest, the Wisconsin Foodie. Good morning, I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 6:36 on Wednesday, June 11th. What are your favorite summer recipes? Are you looking for new ways to prepare certain fruits and vegetables? You can get in touch with us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@WPR.org. You can also tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. My guest is Kyle Cherik. He's the host and co-producer of Wisconsin Foodie, which airs on Wisconsin Public Television and Milwaukee Public Television. Kyle, before the news, you were telling us a bit about what you're growing in your Victory Garden. And I find it interesting that you're referring to it as a Victory Garden, because I didn't know that people still grew Victory Gardens. Tell us a little bit about it.
Absolutely. Well, the background of the Victory Garden was, it really began in England way back in 1812, but we improved on it in World War I and World War II. And during World War II, of course, so much of the war effort or the America's efforts went towards the war effort. And so the bigger farms, and we didn't have industrial farms yet, but the bigger farms, everything that they were growing was going towards the troops overseas in Europe and K-rations and things like that. So it was an interesting, they were interesting bedfellows. The Secretary of War and the Secretary of Agriculture came together and created something called Victory Gardens. And Americans really chipped in. It was amazing. Parks were turned up and gardens were put in place. And Americans had a garden out their front door or their back door all over the place. Grade schools had Victory Gardens, civic locations, and then citizens. And to the point where in 1944, 9.1 billion pounds of fresh produce was grown right here in America for Americans to consume. Just profound. 40% of the fresh fruit and vegetable harvest was grown by Americans, so that we didn't have to essentially tap the supplies that would be sent over to Europe to support our troops. And it was started here as a movement. The group is called the Victory Garden Initiative here in Milwaukee, I think about 6 years ago. And the thinking was, we're eating too much processed food, and our food system has gotten entirely away from us. So for $150, they will come and build a garden on your property where there wasn't one. It's a 4x8 plot. They do, I don't know what it is, 2x12s of lumber. And, you know, two of them cut to 8 feet and two of them cut to 4 feet. And they call it a blitz. So for the 2 weeks leading up to Memorial Day, volunteers drive around the city in big trucks with trailers full of great, amazing soil and pull up to your house if you've gotten one, and they'll construct it, screw it together in all of about 5 minutes. And volunteers, you know, wheelbarrow after wheelbarrow come in and dump this soil. And then you've got basically some of the best soil in the state, and you can plant your garden there. And it's, their motto is grow, is move grass, grow food. And it hasn't denied us a fantastic yard. We still have that, and we can still, you know, enjoy it for the summer. But we've got a garden right in front of our house, and it's a bit of a billboard for the street, which we're proud to have. And we walk out every day, and we pick vegetables. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's, yeah, yeah. So it's part of how I think we ought to be thinking about food. Obviously, with my show, it's the elevator speech for Wisconsin foodie is, where does your food come from? That's in essence what the show is about. But we're trying to change people's consciousness about how they think about food, and at least I am, and in essence then really heal the planet. And so without getting too preachy, when you have a garden out in front of your house, you begin to think about food, and especially in the summer when so much abundance is just coming out of the ground, and where it comes from in a different paradigm.
We're talking with Kyle Cherik, the host and co-producer of Wisconsin Foodie, and we're wondering, how has food or gardening changed the way that you think about food? You can let us know at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And our email address is talk@wpr.org. James is with us in Kimberly. Hi, James.
Hi.
And what are you looking forward to this summer?
We have in our garden broccoli, tomatoes, a few different kinds of tomatoes, everything from Romas to kind of big beefier tomatoes, and small Romas to see lettuce, beets, and what else? Some Brussels sprouts, I do believe. I can't even remember. but what we like to do in the fall is we like to can, do as much canning as we can that, that sounds kind of funny, do as much canning as that we could do so we can have everything last all the way through the winter and into the spring. So, you know, we don't just have to harvest what we have in the fall and then, you know, just finish it up right there and eat it. So we do like stewed tomatoes, salsas, spaghetti sauce, canning, like any of the vegetables we can, you know, like mm-hmm. all of the things, beets, broccoli. And, you know, then we like to give those away, a lot of stuff, because we have so much of it. We give that stuff away as gifts to everybody. And then we even go to the farmer's market in Appleton and, you know, vegetables that maybe we hadn't planted because we don't have a whole lot of room. We'll get things from there and do a lot of canning. And I think that's something that I don't know how many people do it. I grew up with that, with my mom doing it. And so, you know, it seems like something of the past, but I think more people should grow gardens and then can and store things, you know, just so they can have it on those times during the winter. You know, you can go down there and bust open that can of stewed tomatoes or salsa and know that you're still eating the garden, and it's all the way into the dredges of February.
Right. Thanks, James. So what about that, Kyle?
I love it. I mean, canning is, I grew up just as you did, James, canning, and we resented it, there's no question, when we were kids, because we were turned into the fruit or vegetable picking brigade, and then, you know, thrown into a hot kitchen, and were part of the whole thing. I grew up with a really big family, so I understood why my parents were doing it, just for practical reasons, and they had this free workforce. But it's the delight of stretching your season out and then having it into the winter and early spring is just such a fantastic, fantastic thing. There's a chef here that gave me a jar of some, essentially some pickled peppers that he had done that just took me back to the way my grandmother used to do them, and it was just such an amazing gift. And there it was. There they were, bright, delicious, preserved, incredible summer in the midst of that horrible winter we had. It literally bought me another week or two of sanity. It can be that profound.
Mm-hmm. What other vegetables do you recommend for preserving and enjoying over the winter?
We're big fans of some of the outliers. I think James mentioned Brussels sprouts, and they're just so fantastic when they come out of the garden because they look like some prehistoric, vegetable or something. We love the cruciferous squash vegetables, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower. I think asparagus is just fantastic. And then we do the, strawberries. Some friends brought peaches last summer, and we had a lot of fun with them. Tomatoes, of course. You have that bumper crop, and they all hit, it seems, at once when they really want to get going, then, oh, gosh. Mm-hmm. And I also like, on the other side, I was speaking to your producer yesterday, green tomatoes, fried green tomatoes, just in season. Boy, there's nothing like fried green tomatoes. They're so fantastic, mm-hmm. in my mind. But we'll, not to give too, Pollyanna answer, but we'll can just about anything. Once you get into the motion, as anybody knows, it's not like, tying your shoes. You kind of have to set up and be ready. So once you're going, you want to do a whole bunch of stuff and then reap the benefits later on.
Let's talk to Jackie in Drummond. Hi, Jackie.
Oh, fine. Hello. I just kind of tuned in and this just, piqued my interest. I live in Drummond, Wisconsin, but in Cable, Wisconsin, we have a community farm. One of the people in the neighborhood bought a farm, and then they bought the adjacent farm. And the community has given plots, and I have a 5x30, and I have never gardened. And it is so cool because this is bringing all the community together, working in their garden. And then we have a general garden for the whole community, and we're raising fresh foods for our food shelf. And then once we start harvesting, every Monday is Free Food Monday, and everybody can come and take any of the food that's been harvested. And, I mean, this is really cool. I mean, like I said, I've never gardened. Every day I have to run over and see if any of my seeds have come up. So I'm just had to put a plug in for this. Anybody in northern Wisconsin up at Cable going down Perry Lake Road, and they will see this amazing garden. And then we're getting chickens, and community members are assigned a day a week to take care of the chickens. So I signed up for a day, and then when you take care of the chickens, you get your eggs. So this is really pretty cool. And I think a lot of communities have community gardens, and I think we're really seeing the necessity of, growing our own food and the fun and the way it joins us all together.
Thank you, Jackie. That's a great thing to be involved in. And Kyle, you were saying that there are some community gardens in your area as well.
Yeah, and Jackie, I am just so pleased to hear what you're doing. That is fantastic, and I love that your community has come together in that aspect. And as a neophyte gardener, which I was just a couple of years ago, hang in there. It is so much fun, and there is just a wealth of knowledge. It's one of the terrific things about being in the Midwest, is that you can turn to pretty much anybody in a public place and throw out a gardening question, and someone is going to have an answer, and it'll be a good one because there's just all this background. We have a community garden. Milwaukee is replete with them. There should be more in every city. I'm convinced. I think we should be driving past community gardens instead of next to playgrounds and instead of statues of old guys that fought wars. But that's another story. Well, that's not true. We want to honor our veterans for sure. But I think we've got a lot of just stuff on the urban landscape that would be better served by gardens, is my point. We've got one as part of the high school, and it's actually through the recreation department, and I give them all the credit in the world. I think they built, I don't know what it is, maybe 20, 25 gardens. And again, these are just the 4x8 plots. And you rent them for $50 for the growing season. And it's been a fantastic thing for us. It's a great way to meet your neighbors. It's a great way to meet the community because you're weeding and you're planting and you're watering and you're right next to other folks that are doing this. And it's a great way to soak up garden knowledge, because just 5 feet over is a different garden, and the way that they've done laid theirs out and where they put their plantings, and 5 feet over from that is another one, and so on and so forth. So it's a great incubator, which I had not thought of until we got involved, a great incubator of gardening knowledge. And the payoffs there across a couple of seasons have been just sevenfold, eightfold for us.
We're talking with Kyle Cherik. He's the host and co-producer of Wisconsin Foodie, which airs on Wisconsin Public Television and Milwaukee Public Television. And we're taking your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. What are you growing in your garden? Are you looking forward to getting involved in gardening and maybe a community garden? You can let us know. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine on the IDEA Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about summer foods and what to do with our summer harvest here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine, and we're talking with Kyle Cherik. He's the host and co-producer of the Wisconsin Foodie on Wisconsin Public Television and Milwaukee Public Television. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And our email address is talk@WPR.org. You can also leave a comment on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Kyle, let's talk a little bit about protein to round out our nice summer meal. We've got lots of healthy carbs coming out of our vegetables, but what can we do to round out the meal?
Right. Well, and I think protein should be something that, I mean, as America, I think we eat too much meat, essentially, and too much beef in particular, and certainly too much chicken. There's literally, not to be glib, but to take that great quote from Dan Barber's TED Talk, there's just too much chicken in the world. That said, there's some fantastic, fantastic things you can do with protein in the summertime. And I think, just like many other people, we're big fans of grilling. I do think that we should eat, and we try to eat more local fish. Russian Waters trout is just so fantastic and so delicious, and to just. Basically keep the fillets and please everybody that's listening, and then tell five people today, keeping the head on your fish and the eyes and all of that jazz when you grill them or what have you, that's just fine. It's okay. The fish is not staring at you rudely in many other countries. Practically every other one in the world, if you were to go to a restaurant and order a fish and were to be delivered to you with the head gone, it would be sent back. There would be considered something dubious about the fish. So we're big fans of what we'll do specifically with a trout is, just season them really with some herbs, a little olive oil, and throw them on the grill or in a pan fry and just crisp up both sides, flip them. A lot of people that grill know this, that a great steak or a great cut of any sort should only be turned once. That's the rule with terrific fish as well. And you crisp up that skin, and they cook through so quickly. It's probably a 4 to 6, 7 minute on the grill or in a pan fry. And they're terrific. I mean, I just thinking consciously about where our food comes from and what is local, particularly when it comes to water food. I don't like to call it seafood because I think most of our oceans are overfished. Is I think a great way to get protein into your diet, and then not building the meal around that. That shouldn't be protein, in my opinion, shouldn't be 2/3 of your plate with the extras. It should be the other way around because we just consume too much protein in this country.
Hmm. And meanwhile, a lot of vegetarians are looking for meat alternatives to get their protein. And what would you recommend?
Oh, boy. It's so funny. The producer, the executive producer of the show, Arthur Ersink, is a vegetarian. And he does a really terrific job of, I mean, obviously, he has been for years and years and years. And I'm going to fail you on this question because I always fall sort of on my knees when it comes to vegetarian stuff, because I always look at him, you know, we've broken bread, as it were, I don't know, thousands of times now while shooting. And I always look at him and just say, you know, come to the dark side. It's better over here. You're always struggling when we go out. Actually, he's got a pretty good run. But come to the dark side. I can say that there are a million and one ways to get great proteins, to get the vegetables, to get calcium, to get all the other things that you need from fruits and vegetables and grains. The one grain that we have in our house a ton is quinoa. And it's a great source of protein if you're a vegetarian or if you just like delicious things. Quinoa, aromas, brown rice is something that's incorporated into our meal. Again, we made a summer salad just a couple of days ago with quinoa, some sliced up peppers and avocados, and some quickly sautéed almonds that are not in season here yet. Our fruit trees will start bearing at the end of summer and fall, but just a quick dressing, little lemon juice, a little olive oil, little honey, and a little salt, and mixed it together, and it was sublime. It was a great second source of protein for the kids and for ourselves. And that's the other thing, I guess, that I would urge everybody. In the summertime, more than any other, please make your own dressings. I mean, the four things I just ticked off, if you don't have those around the house, you've got just too much processed food in your house. Mm. And to make a simple, elegant, light, amazing dressing is one of the easiest things to do. It's one of the easiest things to do ever. One in front of the other in the kitchen. Yeah, and versatile, exactly. Yeah, and then you can throw this or that in, and you've got a great, you know, variation.
Well, we only have about a minute left. You've given us a long list of things to try this summer, and I'm sure we're all very excited. But as we go out to the next farmer's market or as we head out to the grocery store, even to pick our own vegetables, what's the one thing you think we absolutely must try that we may not have given a fair shot?
Oh, boy. I would say, the one thing. I would say let's go with some of those power greens, the rainbow chards or the collard greens or some of those other things. They're just packed with flavor. There's 100 ways to prepare them. They're so darn good for you. Your mom will smile when you eat them, even if she isn't there. She will from a distance. And they're really versatile too. And I think we've just sort of gotten disconnected from some of the more amazing greens while we've been buying iceberg and content with that.
Well, thank you so much for sharing these ideas with us, and we hope to have you back again.
Hey, it's my delight. Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure. Kyle Cherik is the host and co-producer of Wisconsin Foodie. It airs on Wisconsin Public Television and Milwaukee Public Television. You can check your local listings for the time. Thanks to Robin Cherry for producing the hour and for her on-air direction. Thanks to Christy Taylor for on-air production. You can join us tomorrow at this time. We'll look at a new study that examines the cost of treating autism over time. We'll talk with a guest about that tomorrow at 6 o'clock. I'm Cynthia Schuster in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.